Good morning and welcome. You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. It is time for Final Draft. My name is Andrew Popel, and every week it is my absolute pleasure to bring you books, writing, and literary culture to talk to the authors and explore the issues. Today is a unique, fascinating show. It's a show that I'm really proud to be bringing to you, and it's a book that I'm excited to share. We will be discussing No Friend But the Mountains. The book is authored by Behruz Behshani. Behruz is a Kurdish philosopher, filmmaker, and novelist. He has been imprisoned on Manus Island for 5 years. And in that time, he has crafted this work that takes us into his journey, his imprisonment, his life living on Manus Island. I'm joined in conversation by Behruz. We spoke via WhatsApp from Manus Island. I'm also joined by Dr. Omar Tafigian, who was Behruz's translator and collaborator on No Friend But the Mountains. This is an exciting show because it gets into an issue that goes to the heart, I think, not only of the Australian government and previous governments, but also to who we think we are as a society and really our philosophy of life, of freedom. I'm excited to bring this discussion to you. I really hope you'll join me. It will be coming up after this short break. That is a discussion with Behruz Behshani from Manus Island discussing his book, No Friend But the Mountains.
David Dungay Jr. died in Long Bay Jail after he refused to stop eating a packet of biscuits.
On the morning of December 29th, 2015, corrective service officers stormed the Dungay man's cell.
I'm Taylor Fuller.
I am Miles Herbert. And this is Breathless, the death of David Dungay Jr.
From Guardian Australia and 2SER 107.3, the Dungay family's journey for justice.
Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.
You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. You're listening to Final Draft. My name is Andrew Popel. Now, today on the show, I'm going to be discussing No Friend But the Mountains with its author. He's a Kurdish novelist, philosopher, poet, filmmaker. Behruz Behshani has been imprisoned on Manus Island for 5 years, and in that time he has become a prominent journalist, publishing articles with outlets amongst whom include The Guardian. He's produced a film detailing his experience there, and just recently he released his first book, No Friend But the Mountains. I spoke to Behruz over WhatsApp, and I also spoke with his translator, Dr. Omid Tafigian, and we discussed the creation of the book, the philosophy, and really the experience of living on Manus Island. I'm so happy to be able to bring this conversation to you because I think it is a very important conversation. And, well, I want to leave it to Behruz to explain to you something of No Friend But the Mountains and what it means to be a young Kurdish man living on Manus Island.
No Friend But the Mountains is, you know, actually is a part of Kurdish culture. That Kurdish culture say in the courts, no have friend, but the mountains. Okay, my name is Behruz Behshani. I am a novelist, a Kurdish novelist and journalist, currently living on Manus Island. I am here for 5 years. The Kurdistan history is a real a big tragedy, and the Kurdish people know no friend but the mountains. So, and you know, mountains is a main part of our you know, Kurdistan nature, and has a big impact on music, on food, on you know, people perspectives, and you know, it's very important. Kurdish, you know, the mountains in Kurdish culture as a big part of the nature. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's why I named the book No Friend But the Mountains.
Behruz, for me, he's an indigenous Kurdish man. He's an indigenous person from the Kurdistan region that spans Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Turkey. My name is Omid Tafigian, and at the moment I'm assistant professor in philosophy at American University in Cairo, and I also have an honorary research associate position at the University of Sydney.
Dr. Ahmed Tafigian is a collaborator of Beruz. He worked as translator on No Friend But the Mountains, and he's joining us today to help unpack some of the ideas and philosophies inside the book.
One of the most impressive things about him is his understanding of the natural and built environment. He's extremely intelligent, he's extremely visionary, but he has this deep connection with not only people and an understanding of psychology, but he also has this really sophisticated realization of how built environments and natural environments work and how they affect human beings. He grew up in the mountains. He grew up in a village in Kurdistan in the mountains, and he grew up with interacting with nature, and his experience of folklore and storytelling and mythology, for instance, his experience with these traditions actually relates to the landscape that he grew up around. So it's natural that when he moves from that location to another place, so for instance, when he moved to Tehran, or when he was in Indonesia, when he was even on the boat coming to Australia, and of course in Manus Island and Christmas Island before that, he translates, or he's able to draw on that experience of his environment that's rooted in his indigenous experience with the land.
And how did you come to work and collaborate with Beruz Bashani?
I've been working with refugees, asylum seekers, migrants for quite a number of years, since the Howard era, around the year 2000. And it was about February 2016 that I noticed an article online that someone had posted up on Facebook, written by Beruz, and I was so impressed by it, and it reminded me of so much of the work that was being done in different spaces that I'd experienced overseas. So I sent Beruz a Facebook message congratulating him and telling him that I admire his work, and the relationship began there. We started a conversation, and at one point he asked me if I'd be able to help him with translation.
Ahmed began translating Beruz's articles written in Farsi for publication in Australia and around the world. That collaboration soon grew into his work translating No Friend But the Mountains. And Ahmed is really very much a part of shaping the book that we have today, particularly in the creation of Beruz and the realization of Beruz's beautiful lyrical style and use of language. Let's go back to Beruz, and I'm going to explore the way he uses language and what language does to create and evoke a sense of place, a sense of space and mood in the book. What I was really curious when I discovered the book, I had read your journalism, and you've had an expansive body of work in journalism through organizations like The Guardian since your imprisonment. Can you tell me about the difference in approach and style that you bring in a novel, in No Friend But the Mountains?
Yeah, actually, you know, people in Australia, and especially, you know, particularly those people who have involved in our plight on Manus Island and Nauru, know me as a journalist and a filmmaker. People ask me that, why did you decide to write this book in with literary language? And they say, because, you know, it is a simple question, and the answer is simple as well. I say the answer is that I'm a novelist, because I'm a novelist, so that's why I wrote it in this language. And if I wouldn't be if I was not in Manus Island and I was free in somewhere else, definitely I would write a different novel. But yeah, so of course I'm a novelist and I write novel.
I was very struck by your language in No Friend But the Mountains. You move through prose and lyricism, and you very much work hard to define and help the reader understand language, from the monikers that you give to your fellow prisoners, through the naming of Manus as a prison to you? I mean, very much in Australia, we hear ideas of detention, not prison. But what does it mean for you to write and to create and to define language in your novel?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, for a long time, I published in my articles and I, you know, explain my thinking that we should don't follow the, you know, the official language. So, because, you know, the official language and the government always call this place offshore processing center. But for us is a prison, you know, creating this prison, and they have been able to keep us in this prison for 5 years through their language. So we should create our language and we should, you know, create our concept. So that's why I create some concept like carceral system, systematic torture, prison. And so I think these concepts are true, and we should follow these, and we should work and fight through our own language. And for a long time, I say to the organization and to the advocates and to, you know, human rights people that we should create our language, and we don't have to follow the governmental and official language. And the problem, my big problem with the journalism language is that in the journalism language, the media always following the, you know, this language, the official language. So that's why I think the journalism language is very weak to describe the situation. It's very weak to describe the life on Manus prison. It's very weak to, you know, tell true about, you know, what is happening on Manus and Nauru.
I think people often forget the power in language and the way naming something can then define it. I want to take you for a moment to the opposite of what we were talking about, and I want to talk about silence. What role does silence and invisibility play in maintaining a system like Manus prison? And what do you hope for No Friend But the Mountains in occupying the space that this silence leaves?
Yeah, you know, actually this book, No Friend But the Mountains, when I have started to write it, you know, my aim was to create a work and create a book as a piece of art that remain forever. So, and be over the generations, over the time, and over the places. So we can say that this book is not for this time. It's not for this historical time. It's not only for this historical time. And also, it's not only about refugees. It's not only about the Kurdish people. It's not only about, you know, Australia. This book is belong to unknown readers from around the world. This book is for next generation as well. So that's why I think it's very important. And I spent so much time to create this book.
You mentioned before the Kuriakal system. And in No Friend But the Mountains, you outline this world of hierarchy and privilege and unspoken power within the prison, where a man may occupy the front of every line unchallenged, or a group may control a mango tree, and yet all of these people must succumb to the officers who have their own power hierarchy between the Australians and the Papuas. Can you talk to me about Kuriakal and the operation of the Kuriakal system within the Manus prison?
Yeah, I think when I say Kuriakal system, I don't mean only you know, this system exists on Manus prison or on Nauru. When I say carceral system, I mean in outside of Manus as well. In Australian society, you can see carceral system in, you know, the social structures and political structures in Australia as well. in hospitals, in you know, educational system, in the universities, in the, you know, military places, and you know, all of the structures we can see a part of hierarchical system, and you know, a system that takes people identity, take people, you know, humanity, and but what I am understanding is that the man's prison is the main hierarchical system. So by studying about man's prison and the hierarchical system that is controlling man's prison, by studying this prison, deeply and try to understand that how they are torturing people, we can understand the other part of hierarchical systems in the other social and political structures on Australia and other Western countries. So that's why I call this book, you know, Beyond of Man's Prison, and I call this book as a book for Australia and other, you know, Western countries. So, yeah, I think people by reading this book, they can find some similarity in the, you know, in the society.
Hierarchical system is extremely important, especially for understanding the way systematic torture works, how it operates, and how it's deeply rooted in the whole, in the architecture, in the design of the space, and also how it relates to so much related to Australian politics, society, and culture, and of course its colonial history.
That's Dr. Omid Tafidjian, Beruza's translator of No Friend But the Mountains again.
When I went to Manus Island and I met with Beruza, as I mentioned in my translator's note, it was the day I arrived was the very day that Hamed Shamshiripour, his body was found. And I realized from talking to people there and from really just getting a feel for what's happening, how people are living, how they're trying to cope with the purgatory that they've been placed in and the unbearable pressure. To understand what that's like, to really get a grip on what's happening, what sort of punishment is being inflicted, you need to understand that not just the structure, because there's no superstructure that's governing the prison and Australia's border regime. It's actually multiple forms of oppression that are interlocking, and this is where the hierarchical system comes into play. It's and this is why it's so hard to really pin down and analyze and to explain. It's because it's so unpredictable, but at the same time so well planned. There's issues around gender, sexuality, race, faith-based discrimination, class, militarism, colonialism. All of these things are operating together to keep the refugees in this particular state.
We can see in Manus Island and Nauru that 12 people already died and many people damaged physically and mentally. So we can see the result of this system. We can see the result of this systematic torture. You know, this, when I say hierarchical system, is a system with some parts. So just I want to give you an example, give you a picture. When I say hierarchical system and man's prison, this hierarchical system has some, you know, elements, you know, some small part of system, like, you know, medical and man's prison is a system that is controlling by the hierarchical system. The guards, immigration, case managers, interpreters, you know, all of those people who are working on this system and who are a part of this system, you know, they put people through, you know, many rules, many rules. And in the end, people don't receive what they ask. For example, when a refugee is sick, he has to, you know, he has to fill a request form and wait for a few days. After a few days, they call him and he should go to medical, and he has to stay in the long queue. And when he go there, he should stay there for an hour, 2 hours to see a doctor. But he see a nurse, and then they give him some painkiller and send him back. Mm-hmm. And he after few days, he again has to fill a request form. So they put him through a long, period mm-hmm. with bureaucratic system, and in end, the people die. Mm. In end, Hamid Khazai in the book, you can see that he die. But he fight a lot to get medical treatment. But they put him through a rules just to torture him. Maybe people say that, yeah, it's okay that you stay in the long queue and you fill a request form to get medical treatment. Yeah, it's easy, but just for a few days, for a month, not for 5 years. So imagine a person be sick in this system for 5 years. Of course, this system has this power to destroy anyone.
Can I ask you to talk to me some more about freedom? Because throughout the book, you explore the construction and development of the prisoner's identity and the relationship to the concept of freedom. And in your character, you even mention being frightened of freedom. How does this, you got me thinking about myself as well. How does a system work itself up around an individual to the point that it makes them frightened of freedom? Or do we even understand what freedom is?
You know, your question is that about only myself, is that right?
Well, my question is about the idea of freedom, and you got me thinking about the way I operate and move within systems in my world and what I understand freedom to be. And it struck me that in No Friend But the Mountains, you discuss freedom in relation to yourself, in relation to the other men around you. And simply thinking about freedom is a product of imprisonment, it struck me. And freedom is not something that I think about because it's part of my background. I consider myself to be free. And as soon as I started thinking about freedom, I realized ways in which my world is constrained. What does thinking about freedom and thinking about imprisonment mean for an individual's identity?
Yeah, I think, freedom is a concept that needs to understanding. So people should understand freedom. Many people, they think are free, and they think that they are living in freedom, but actually they are not living in freedom. So maybe someone in a prison have some part of freedom, and other people who are free, they are not living in freedom. So the freedom for me is the concept that you should understand it. And freedom is that you don't be a part of the structure, you don't be a part of the system, and you don't be, that is freedom in my understanding. Just imagine people in Australia, many people I know in the universities, in the educational system, that always they are complaining because the structure put them through a situation that just they work and they the system take their identity, take their freedom, and even they know have this power to leave the job. They know have this power to leave their job, and they know have this power to do whatever they want to do. So for me, my understanding is that freedom is a concept that you should understand it, and it's different person by person.
But it's a deliberate process that every individual has to undertake. I want to talk then about art and the role of art. In his introduction and translator's note, Omid observes how integral narratives are to living life well. And he talks about how you're translating No Friend But the Mountains helped him understand that. Now, you're imprisoned illegally at the hands of the Australian government. So it's hard to say that you are living well at the moment. It's certainly not the life you would choose for yourself. But what has the process of crafting this book brought to the way you live life? I mean, it was a very unique process and it's taken you 5 years, but what did that process bring to the way you live your life?
You know, actually, I always say that writing and creating art is, is a way that I survive. So I writing, and I creating art, I am living through my works to survive. So that is important. So this book, written in a very harsh condition, and actually with a very incredible process, because I send this book bit by bit, text by text, to my translator, to Omid, and it was a very hard process for me, in a situation that I didn't have access to internet. So it was really hard to, it's really hard to, when I think about the past, that how did I write this book, it's very incredible for myself as well. So it was really hard, but what I am thinking, I am, you should imagine a prisoner. I mean, me, I am a prisoner.
Yes.
So in a prison, that the system always, reduce me to a number. They call me MEG-45. They didn't call me Beirut. They call me MEG-45. They, always try to, the system is designed to humiliate me and others and take our identity. So writing for me, give my identity back and give me power, give me, keep my morality, keep my humanity. So the writing for me is an act of resistance. Art for me is an act of resistance to survive.
Thank you. You've taken so much time to talk to me.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
If I may, though.
Yeah, actually, your question is very different with others, so that's why I enjoy.
Oh, thank you. I want to thank you again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for taking the time. I'm so glad that I'm going to be able to share No Friend But the Mountains with my listeners, and hopefully, I've already got a few people that want to steal my copy off me, so I'm going to share this book as far and wide as I can. It's hard to say have a nice day or something trite when I sign off to you, because I know you're still in a terrible situation, but
I understand. Thank you very much.
I look forward to the day when
it's very kind of you.
I look forward to the day when I can see you free. Thank you, Beirut.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3, and this is Final Draft for about a minute longer. It is time for me to leave. My name is Andrew Popel, and you have been listening to my conversation with Beirut Bashani about his new book, No Friend But the Mountains, detailing his life imprisoned on Manus Island for the last 5 years. I was also joined in conversation by Dr. Omid Tafidjian. He is Beirut's translator for No Friend But the Mountains. Now, if you want more of my conversation with Beirut, it's going up on the podcast this week. So make sure you're tuning into the podcast, you're subscribing. Look, if you're enjoying this conversation, if you're enjoying these conversations about books, can you rate us? Can you like us? It does help people to discover more. I'm going to leave you now. It is time for The Vulture's Nest. Stay tuned to 2SER and come back next week for more Final Draft. My name's Andrew Popel. I'll see you then, but it's bye for now.